thank you for downloading or streaming today's episode of the PW Torch Livecast. In just a couple minutes, we'll get you to the show. But first, I want to let you know about our big $1 VIP sale. If you have not become a PW Torch VIP member, this is the best time of year to do it. We are running our $1 sale in association with it being SummerSlam month. We are creating a SummerSlam special section on the PW Torch VIP website that will feature links to our SummerSlam reports dating back to when the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter started in the late 1980s through this year's. We're also creating a collection of our post-SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtables dating back to the mid-2000s. The last dozen SummerSlams have been covered with post-pay-per-view roundtables since we launched the PW Torch VIP website in the mid-2000s, and you can subscribe to that feed on your smartphone and listen to what we had to say the night of SummerSlam for the last dozen years. And you can subscribe to it exclusively as a VIP member on your smartphone or in iTunes. Just like all VIP audio, you can subscribe on your iPhone, Android, or through iTunes, or stream it directly from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. You also get everything else that comes with a VIP membership, ad-free access to our website, exclusive articles, the new weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter chronicling wrestling history in depth, the biggest stories, the biggest events, obscure house show results, TV reports, exclusive columns, cover stories, and so much more. 1,500 plus back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Also, in the month of July, we posted over 130 podcasts for our VIP members. The live casts are great. They're even better when the commercials are edited out. And that's a bonus for VIP members. The commercials are edited out of the PW Torch live casts, and they're available for your convenience on our VIP audio feed, in addition to VIP exclusive shows that only VIP members listen to. I host The Fix with Todd Martin midweek for about 2 hours, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show on weekends for about 2 hours. The two top wrestling analysts in the business are part of PW Torch VIP every week. I also record the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. I've recorded it every single day for 8 years. No days off. You wake up, and there it is, the Wade Keller Hotline with the latest breaking news, my answers to VIP member questions, and every Monday night and Tuesday night, a detailed rundown with my analysis of both Raw and SmackDown. So much more comes with the VIP membership. Get full details at pwtorch.com/govip. And the coupon code for our sale is livecast2017. No space, lowercase, livecast2017. Enter that in the promo code box on our mobile-friendly sign-up form, and you are in for $1 for one full month. Or you can take that $9 discount and apply it to a three-month or a one-year subscription. That means that a $99 subscription for 1 year gets dropped down to $90, which equates to paying just on average $7.50 a month for the next year. If you are a fan of our work here on the PW Torch Livecast and my new show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast over at Podcast One, you will love the PW Torch VIP audio lineup. So go VIP for $1 or take $9 off a longer-term subscription. This offer expires soon. Don't miss out. pwtorch.com/govip. Enter promo code LiveCast2017. That's LiveCast2017. No space in there. LiveCast2017. We'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to earn your business for the long run. Find out what people love about their PW Torch VIP membership and get more of what you love in terms of pro wrestling podcasts brought to you by the team at Pro Wrestling Torch.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, August 24th, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact, and we have a new Global Force Wrestling Champion. His name is Eli Drake. Andrew Stelcek, what did you think of... We'll start with the main event first, and we'll sort of work our way through the show. But what did you start... What were your thoughts on the main event and the crowning of Eli Drake as the new GFW champion?
I thought the main event was pretty solid. It was basically a one-match show. It must have been close to an hour, but I had not seen the spoilers, so I was pretty surprised that Eli Drake came out on top, especially how he'd been pushed lately. And I thought the last 5 minutes or so were pretty great. What do you think?
I am in total agreement. Yeah, I like the show. I like the show a lot. I liked what they did, really building it around one match. I like the stuff that they did backstage. Like you said, and I want to sort of get this out of the way quickly here, I also avoided spoilers. So if you are going to get on the line tonight at 515-605-9345, we, of course, appreciate and welcome your phone calls. But we don't want to talk. We don't want to go too far ahead with getting into spoilers, because both Andrew and I make an effort to try to avoid them. I know when I think it makes it gives you a better analysis when you're sort of breaking down the show to not know where they're going. But yeah, so anyway, and again, the number 515-605-9345. I was a fan of pulling the trigger on Eli Drake now. It sort of reminds me a little bit of what WWE does. You know, they sort of pull back on a guy before they start to really build him back up. We've seen it in the past with guys who have won Money in the Bank, where they go on a losing streak and then all of a sudden win the title out of nowhere, because in Vince McMahon's mind, people will forget about those losses as soon as they win the title. I'm not sure that that's necessarily what they were doing here, because their tapings are a little bit, obviously it's a different type of schedule. But given the choices, you know, I'm not opposed to this. You know, you could have put the belt on a few guys and I would have been okay with it. And Drake is one of the ones that I'm okay with. It didn't come out of nowhere. They've treated him over the course of the last year. Excuse me. He's been treated enough like a star where I think that it makes enough sense. You know what I mean? I don't think that it's out of nowhere. It's not like Fala Ba won the world title tonight. That would have been completely out of nowhere. I mean, this seems totally fine, totally acceptable, and I'm looking forward to seeing the shows over the next few months built around Eli Drake.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, yeah, ideally, I wish he would have had more momentum going into this, but I mean, I've been complaining for months now that he hasn't got enough, so it would be kind of hypocritical to full on go against this idea. So yeah, I, as well, I'm excited for this. I think we've both been very high on him for months, and I'm also glad that they didn't give the title to Johnny Impact his first night in. It's good that they went with an original, you could say. It makes the company itself seem more prestigious if a former WWE guy can't just come in and take their top spot right away, which they've been guilty of many, many times in the past.
And I like the way that they eliminated him too. You know, where they he was sort of a fluke elimination. He certainly has a case to come back and say that you know, he shouldn't have been eliminated or whatnot, because the way he was eliminated, if you didn't see the show, Eli Drake dives through the middle ropes and ends up on the outside, and that's not an elimination. You need to go over the top. So Eli Drake comes from behind while Johnny Impact is on the apron and grabs his ankle, pulls him off the apron, so he gets eliminated by somebody who's on the outside of the ring. So I think he has a case. You know, you give him an excuse, trying to protect him a little bit. I thought the booking here was good all around, really. I thought the way that mm-hmm. Lashley was eliminated let me ask you this on Lashley, because this is where I lose it a little bit. This is one of the things that I didn't find to be particularly, or that I didn't really like about the show. But it's a minor thing towards the end. What did you think of the American Top Team attacking the referee again angle that they pulled immediately after Drake won the title? My initial thought was, you're taking away from what's supposed to be a big moment of crowning a new champion with something happening at ringside. And I think I get the argument of like, hey, it was coming out of nowhere, it's unexpected, you know, here, this is happening, we're going to shoot it. But to me, it sort of took away from this hour-long title match that you just had. I think I would have rather them see them do something else to further that storyline. What did you think of that angle towards the end, where I think it was Colby Covington again attacked the referee, and then American Top Team gets involved with everybody at ringside?
I was down on that as well. I might even be more down on it than you were, because I thought that was pretty ridiculous. you know, it is like this feel-good story. He was really good in that match, Eli Drake, a complete surprise. You know, a feel-good moment in a sense, and also a moment that, if you look at it from a storyline perspective, you're supposed to be all mad at him. But no matter what, the focus is supposed to be on Eli Drake. They could have pulled that angle with the ref being beat up as soon as Lashley got eliminated. That just seems to me like it would have made a lot more sense to do it then. Hi, doggy.
Yeah, my dog's just saying hello. They're usually asleep by now. Quiet.
That's fine. So yeah, that did annoy me a bit. And Josh Matthews even brought that up on the show that, you know, like, oh, this is his moment. But I don't think that's one of those things that puts heat on Lashley. It puts heat on the company a little bit and kind of undermined what Eli Drake did by making it seem like the ref getting beat up was a bigger storyline.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't like the way that it played out. I mean, they gave enough shine to Drake towards the end, but it was a little, I don't know. I just thought they could have done it differently to make it not seem like it was taking away from Eli Drake's title win. Again, the number here is 515-605-9345. I'm going to go to a quick break here early in the show just so that I can get the dogs that were just saying hello out of the room. And so we can continue on with the show. Again, the number 515-605-9345. 45. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast Post Impact Edition. Andrew and I will also bring you our top three pushes that GFW or TNA should not have given up on so soon. So we have a lot of stuff coming up later. That top three segment comes up later in the show. Again, the number 515-605-9345. More in a minute right here in the PW Torch Livecast.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast. Again, the number 515-605-9345. Andrew, we'll sort of run down the show segment by segment in a little bit like we normally do. But one of the things that I thought was interesting tonight before, it's sort of an overall point, because they did this at a lot of different points throughout the show. Did you notice that they were sort of taking the WWE approach when it came to backstage segments tonight, in the sense that there was a lot of segments that came up where it was like they just, guys involved didn't know the camera was there?
I noticed they did like a phone one tonight. I can't remember the circumstances.
They did.
That's always
Jim Cornette. It was before American Top Team came in the room.
That drives me insane. Because literally WWE, I think, did it twice on SmackDown. They do it on Raw. SmackDown every single week. That drives me nuts. Yeah, it was a different I mean, I think when Cornette was in, did they make it look like they were peeking in on him?
I think the first one, yeah, I think they made it. No. Or no, with okay. I'm sorry, it was later in the show when he was in the office with Eddie Edwards. They made it sort of look like you were looking through the door.
Yeah, okay, like that stuff I like that approach better than, yeah, than just them not knowing it's there. Because yeah, that's one of the benefits that GFW, or one of the things they do better than WWE, I think.
One of the things that stood out to me in regards to things like that I just thought made it look silly was the backstage segment with LAX, where, I mean, I get the gimmick. I understand what LAX is. But when you're on camera, again, pretending like the camera is not there, literally talking about crimes you're committing. Diamante was talking about legitimate prostitutes that they are apparently in charge of. I'm not even joking. That to me just looks ridiculous. Like I think it really stood out and takes away from any sense of realism. I mean, let's say if we're going to suspend disbelief in LAX as an actual criminal organization, I don't think that they're going to talk about running their prostitutes and smuggling things over the border on camera. And it's pretty evident that the camera is literally sitting at the table with them. So there's stuff like that that I see that still happens. And look, I mean, GFW isn't the only one that does it. WWE does it all the time, where you see heels come up with some sort of plan backstage and nobody's supposed to know. It's a secret. Like, the camera wasn't really there. That it's little things like that that just drive me insane. And GFW, for the most part, like you said, sort of has avoided that. But they did some things like that tonight, which it was the first time I think I've noticed it on the show in a while. And it has me a little concerned over where they might be going down the road.
Yeah. And it's such like an easy fix in that aspect. They could just say like LAX sent us in this footage, you know, and then just shoot it more. I don't know, make it look like it's on a cell phone or it's just a little bit grainier, give it its own feel. And of course, yeah, I would also leave off the dialogue of them, you know, when they talk about murdering people or prostitutes. That's probably something to stay away from.
Like the mafia.
Like Lucha Underground.
You don't see documentaries on the mafia where they like just welcome people in and they go, oh yeah, yeah, we killed so and so, and you know, we smuggle these drugs. Yeah, we did it last night down by the dock. Yeah, come on, just try to be a little real. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, it's just a little fix, and it would go a long way into establishing their own cohesive storytelling universe. I can accept that in Lucha Underground because every segment is shot that way backstage. So they've set up their own rules for how that plays out. But GFW and WWE goes back and forth all the time, and it's just madness that they do that.
Yeah, GFW sort of comes to me across like they're trying to present themselves as a sport, which I think they should. So if you're going to do that, you need to present yourself as a sport. You know, even guys discussing strategy backstage, I wouldn't be a fan of. Because you look at like an NFL game, right? I mean, I know there's interviews and stuff in locker rooms and at halftime, but you would never see a coach shot in his office before a game talking about what his strategy was going to be for that game. I mean, you never see that. So why in pro wrestling would you? You know, why in pro wrestling would you see a tag team talking about, you know, what their strategy was going to be in an upcoming match? It's just, it takes the realism out of it for me. And I think you got to try to stick, if you're going to present yourself a sport, especially, you need to really be strict and keep yourself as realistic as possible. They do a pretty good job. You know, I don't want to pile on such a minute detail because they do a pretty good job, I think, of doing that. But there were some instances tonight where they sort of dipped their toe into that WWE style of, we're going to shoot things and pretend that even though in GFW's case, hundreds of thousands of people are seeing it on television and everyone has access to it, and we're going to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I wonder why they're doing that as well, unless Jeff Jarrett's just getting some new ideas. I mean, a few weeks ago, we were complaining about him taking part in that segment, basically, that basically said wrestling was not real, which is not something that should have ever aired. So I wonder if, like, Jeff Jarrett is just trying to experiment with presentation, but it's not coming across well.
Here's another example of it that stood out to me and I thought was ridiculous. They ended the show last week airing a video where Johnny Impact said that he was going to be at the Impact Zone tonight. They literally said he was going to be there. They had been building up all night. Jim Cornette has a surprise entrant for the Gauntlet match. Jim Cornette has a surprise. He's got a surprise. We don't know who it's going to be. The surprise was Johnny Impact. And I'm sorry. Like I said, that's the surprise? We all knew he was going to be here. And then Jeremy Borash at one point even said, nobody in this match was preparing for Johnny Impact. Well, apparently they don't watch their own show because everybody saw a video package that they ended their show with last week that said, now that granted they didn't say that he was going to be in the match, but you're into your main event. I think everybody knew he was going to be involved. I just don't say it's a surprise entrant when you literally the week before advertise that he's going to be there. That's not a surprise.
It's not just that. either. There was a poster of Johnny Impact in Jim Cornette's office.
Oh, no way.
For Glory.
So. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so every wrestler who walked in there apparently didn't see that. Neither did the announcers. I mean, the whole night I was like, oh, who's the surprise? Because I figured there was somebody else.
So did I.
Hadn't been brought up.
So did I.
Like you said, that was a letdown.
I was just expecting Johnny Impact to be in the match. I mean, he was kind of advertised. Mm-hmm. They said last week he was going to be there. So I never once considered that he was going to be the surprise entrant. I agree with, I thought it was somebody else they were bringing in. Because there's been rumors of all these different people they're talking to. And I said, oh, well, they're going to debut someone else here. It makes some sense. I just thought it was ridiculous. And then to have the announcers play up that no one knew that he was going to be here and nobody was prepared for him. It's like, well, they should have been. We all knew he was going to be there. Why didn't anybody that works there?
Yeah, that was bad. I mean, it would have been much better had they just had him, you know, not done that video last week and had him show up in the match, because then it would have been an actual great surprise.
But exactly, yeah.
They ruined it. Yeah, no idea what they were thinking there. I mean, I guess they wanted more people to tune in, but you can't give away a surprise and then still say it's a surprise. That beats the entire purpose of it.
Yeah. It is then, by definition, not a surprise.
Exactly.
All right. So they started the show with a number of video packages. There was just one match, and we'll talk about that that opening match later on when we sort of run down, I'd say run down the card. It was a two-match show, but there was other stuff that happened backstage that we can talk about. Were you surprised that they went to the main event as early as they did? I have it written down here that the bell rang for the main event at 9:02. So, I mean, granted, it's a 20-man gauntlet battle royal. It's going to take a while. I was a little surprised that they gave the second hour totally to this match. I sort of figured it was going to start sometime around 9:15, 9:20, but they gave this match a considerable amount of time. There wasn't a single elimination until the seventh person was in the ring. So were you surprised that they gave this match as much time as they did? I didn't expect at 9 o'clock to be going to the main event. I figured we would have had at least another segment, at least 9:15 before they, because it was going to take a while. Look, they were going to need some time. You weren't going to do that match in 10 minutes, but I was a little caught off guard that they were starting it right there at the start of hour number two.
Yeah, I thought it was going to last probably 30, 35 minutes. Usually when they do those kind of matches, they like people get eliminated ridiculously fast just to fit in that time frame. So I was surprised when it started at 9:00. And I was pretty excited over it. I was, you know, giving a match and like that an hour, helps the show stand out, and it makes it like a memorable match and episode overall. So yeah. Definitely surprised, but in a good way.
This is one, and we'll never know these numbers, but this is one where I would be fascinated to see the quarter hour ratings, or even the minute, mm-hmm. the minute by minutes, you know, when you dedicate an hour-long match on your show, I'd be really interested in, did they build an audience over the course of that hour? What was the type of social media impact? Do they gain viewers? Do they lose viewers? I mean, this is one where it would really be a cool study to see just what happened over the course of that second hour. Because you've heard, you know, the reason why WWE doesn't put particularly long matches on their TV is they're afraid of losing people, and they're afraid of people tuning out and changing mm-hmm. the channel. You know, why you wouldn't put a 60-minute Iron Man match on Raw, because people are going to tune out, and then 58 minutes later, they're going to turn back and see who won. So I think that when you start the main event at 9, everyone, I mean, I had in my, okay, they're starting at 9, but clearly this match is going to end the show. It's going to go all the way till 10. It could have been easy for people to just turn off the TV and come back at 9:50 and see where they were and who was going to win. So it would be really, I mean, we'll never know, because these numbers obviously aren't released, and we'll have total viewership, but I would be really fascinated to see what this match did, or what this show did by quarter hour, to see what happened in that second hour. If they were able to either gain viewers, did they lose viewers, or did they just sustain what they had going into the second hour?
Yeah, I would be too. I remember when Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle had their Iron Man match on SmackDown, probably 2004-ish. It was a great, great match. And you would think it would have been like a big ratings boost. But I remember that it basically was just doing what SmackDown was drawing at that time, because people would just, it's an hour long match, I'll just skip the 40 minutes, the first 40, and come back. So I wonder if that happened tonight as well. And I think if I do have a problem with the match, it's the participants. Like, half of them probably shouldn't have been in there. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or later.
Yeah.
So I think they should have tried to put in a few more surprises, or a few more, just more fun surprises, as opposed to a suicide, who has literally never won a single match since his return.
Yeah, that was something that I noticed too. There was several guys that shouldn't have been involved, and some guys that I thought they left out. Desmond Xavier won the Super X Cup last week.
Yes.
He wasn't even on the show. Matt Sydal, I mean, I sort of get not putting Matt Sydal in the match because he won a title shot a week ago, but still, why doesn't he deserve to be in the match for the title? This doesn't have to be his title shot. He could, if he doesn't win it tonight, he still has that title shot. So I thought that those two guys, just off the top of my head, those two guys absolutely should have been involved. I mean, if Garza Jr. was involved, why wasn't one of the guys from LAX? I thought that was a little weird. Although I guess low key was, so maybe that's why. But still, I thought there was some room for some other guys. And then back to the long match discussion too. One thing that comes to mind, the only time I can think of WWE doing an hour long match on TV was Cena versus Shawn Michaels rematch from their WrestleMania. Yeah. I think it was WrestleMania 23, and then I think it was a Raw. I want to say it was from London. And they didn't advertise it. People, I think, knew by the time, if you read spoilers, because they taped it in London, I think people knew by the time the show was on the air that they had this hour-long match. But the thing that they did there is they didn't advertise it, because I think they were afraid of people tuning out. And they had other things advertised for later in the show, if I remember. Now, this is going back 11 years, so I might be not remembering this completely, but I want to say that they had other advertised matches in another advertised main event that Jim Ross at one point during that Cena Michaels match said, hey, we're going to have to do that next week. This match is still going. And I really liked that presentation at the time because, it wasn't like, well, okay, they have this match that's going to start at the time. Rob was 9 to 11. So they have this match that's going to start at 10. What if it ends at 10:30? Then what are they going to do? There's nothing else. They had other things advertised, even though they obviously knew they weren't going to get to them. And I'm not saying you don't deliver on advertised matches every week, but this was something where, hey, these guys are in the ring, it's happening, and we're going to stay with it till it's over. So I don't think that they necessarily needed to do something like that with this match, obviously, because it was set up to be a long match, 20 people coming in different increments and whatnot. But yeah, I was just a little surprised. I thought that they were going to try to keep it maybe 40 minutes and maybe use that 9 o'clock hour to do something with someone like Desmond Alexander, who they're trying to get some steam behind. I get that they want to keep people fresh and not have everybody on TV every week, but Desmond Xavier keeps saying, I've done that before, haven't I? Desmond Alexander. Desmond Xavier.
It happened.
Yeah. Desmond Xavier, who you're trying to put some steam behind right now, and you just had him win a tournament that's been a threaded storyline on your show throughout the last several weeks. To me, like, he should have been doing something on this show tonight, even if it was just an interview to talk about, winning the Super X Cup. And even if it was just a sit down, like a backstage sit down type interview, like a video package that they've done really good things with. I thought that they should have done something with him.
I think that would have gone a long way as well. They, he's been around for a few months, but he keeps like disappearing. He's not one of the regulars that shows up every week, but this is where he should be featured more. And it was strange that Ishimori was in the match when he was the one that lost to Desmond Xavier. It just goes back to how random that all was. And they really want Jim Cornette to be in there to make it more sports-like, to make it seem like everybody, got a fight for their spot. And nobody's coming in here to take a vacation. But then they do stuff like that where it's just completely random. That hurt his effort of trying to make a change in the company overall. Also, just to go back to like your Jim Ross comment where he was talking about the main event. I was watching Ring of Honor a few months ago, and they put out a match like halfway into their TV show, and they said they did something similar. They're like, we think this match is going to go long, but if it doesn't, we have guys on standby, you know, to basically finish off the show. So I wish.
Oh yeah.
I wish every promotion would do stuff like that. And I know people give Tony Schiavone a lot of crap, but he, at least when shows went to commercial break, he would say, like, if this match ends during the commercial break, we have it on tape and we'll show it.
Yes.
Which that also drives me insane because, like, you know, both WWE and GFW, whenever they go to a commercial, they're like, more of this match when we come back. And it's like, how do they know it's not going to end in the next 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Because odds are it should happen, like, every week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
Minor rant there I had to get out.
Nope, I completely agree with you. I like to see them just not go to commercial at all during matches, but, you know.
Right.
Again, it goes back to my preference of wrestling being presented as sport. You watch the UFC. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I'm going to watch McGregor Mayweather this weekend. It's on pay-per-view, so there's no commercials. I get it. But if they were to start running an ad in like the middle of round two, I'd lose my mind, and so would everybody else. I mean, it doesn't seem like you're taking your own sport seriously when you take commercials in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of commercials, we're going to go to our next break, and then we're going to get right to phone calls at 515-605-9345. Before we go to the break, though, I just received an alert on my phone. There is some breaking news out of NXT. This is from WWE.com. NXT Women's Champion Asuka has relinquished her title to NXT General Manager William Regal tonight at Full Sail University. After her dominant performance and historic 500-plus day reign as NXT Women's Champion, the Empress of Tomorrow looks to her future for new opportunities in WWE. Although no specific details are known at this time, her reign will officially end on the date that her historic announcement airs. And again, that is just posted to WWE.com as we're on the air here. So some breaking news out of NXT. Asuka, of course, undefeated. It's certainly, they're making it sound like, you know, she's out, I think it was 6 to 8 weeks with an injury that she suffered at TakeOver on Saturday. And they are making it sound like she will make her main roster debut undefeated. Because, you know, looking for future looks to her future for new opportunities in WWE. I think that means when she comes back from injury, she's going to be on the main roster with either SmackDown or Raw. So maybe spinning a potential negative of her injury into a positive in terms of getting her on the main roster still undefeated. I was actually wondering that on Saturday watching TakeOver. How do you get her to the main roster still undefeated, because this so much has been made over her undefeated streak. How do you get her to the main roster still undefeated and not have her be NXT champion? Well, this, you know, she's injured. She's got to relinquish the title, and when she comes back, she's going to look for new opportunities. I think this is actually a smart way of turning what was a negative of her getting hurt into a positive. They're going to get her on the main roster still undefeated.
I think that's a great call. Yeah. I've been a big fan of her, title run. I think this undefeated streak means something. And yeah, you can't have her go to, say, SmackDown and have her hold the NXT title for 6 months or however long she's going to be undefeated. Like, that would really hurt NXT. So yeah, I think this is a really smart way of getting the title off of her.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is you don't want her saying, even though the NXT division is supposed to be a developmental territory, I don't think you want her just giving up the belt to go to SmackDown either. You know, you don't want her giving up the belt and then going, I'm going to go to SmackDown. And if she's treated as a mid-carder right away, then it's like, well, you gave up your title to be a mid-carder on SmackDown. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. So I like this. I like this move. We'll talk more WWE-related topics for VIP members later tonight. Andrew and I record a VIP after show right when the live cast goes off the air. They're both posted to the RSS feeds around the same time. So if you want to hear more of our WWE thoughts, including we'll probably talk a little more about Asuka relinquishing the NXT women's title. You can sign up to be PW Torch VIP. You'll get our VIP after show and a whole bunch of other stuff at pwtorch.com. So let's go to another break. When we come back, we'll hit the phone calls at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch livecast.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks, or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345. Let's go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan is our first caller tonight. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Pretty good.
No complaints.
Me either. So, before I get into my question, I would just like to say that I'm not sure if either one of you have done this, but I neglected to mention that I was one of, I'm sure, very few individuals to watch the one night only anthology show. And my observation from that so far is I'm very glad that Jeff Jarrett and company abandoned the seasonal format that he originally attempted to sell to potential television partners.
Yeah, Andrew, I have not caught that. Any of those amped episodes yet? The ones that, oh, they started airing them on pay-per-view. They, I think they said tonight that the next one was going to air. The next chapter was going to air on September 15th. But have you caught those at all, Andrew?
No, I haven't. Kylan, how much do they cost?
Either $24.95.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Actually, a lot more than I... That's double what I expected.
Yeah, I thought a lot of their one-night-onlys were running about 15, I thought. So, yeah, that is a big jump.
Yeah,
that's also, another thing for VIP members, too, as we talk about this, Greg Parks has a column up that posted today for VIP members. It was in this week's PW Torch newsletter, I believe. He was looking at the same episodes and had some impressions of what... or had his impressions of those episodes of Amped as well. But... Kylan, answer your question. No, neither of us have seen them yet. What were your impressions aside from being happy that they abandoned the seasonal approach?
Well, if you discount the fact that most of the people who wrestled on these episodes are now with WWE, I would say. The wrestling is fairly decent to good quality.
Yeah, it seemed that way from reading Greg's column earlier today. His takeaways were like, you know, the matches were good, they had clean finishes, but at the same time, he didn't think it was anything that was revolutionary and sort of understood why no network really went out of their way to pick it up.
Yeah, I would agree with Greg. Now on to my questions. Question number one is in regards to Global Force authority figures, and specifically Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette did an interview with and for his partner on his Jim Cornette Experience podcast, Brian Last, in which he said the following quote, I am not a full-time member of the Global Force roster, as I do not wish to sign a full-time contract for any promotion, as I feel as though I am way too old to contribute to anybody's promotion at this stage of my life. Yet, so far, Jim Cornette has appeared on two straight weeks worth of pro. My first question is, was he lying to try to kayfabe us so that he could allow Jeff Jarrett to offer him some type of an office position, since he and Jeff Jarrett are dear friends going back to his grandfather's in the business? Or did he really not think he would be on television that much and got hoodwinked into being a probably every week presence on TV?
Yeah, I think he's sort of doing a little work shoot there. I listened to the podcast today, actually, and I also listened to, he did an interview with Brian last week. I think they aired it on Friday on the Jim Cornette YouTube channel, where he talked about being back in the company. And he was sort of going back and forth between storyline and shoot about how he was there to represent the network. And, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily signed a contract. It's very possible that maybe he hasn't. But I think that if he's the man in charge, that he's probably going to be on TV every week. And if they were taping every week in Orlando and they were a live show, I don't think we'd see him. But given the way that they run their taping schedule, I think it's possible that he could be on TV every week. And I know he was down there. I mean, he talked in the podcast today about how he was just wrapping up and coming back from Orlando. So he was definitely down there for the entire set of tapings. And for him to be an every week presence on Impact isn't an every week commitment. You know, it's a few days, maybe five or six times a year, however many times that they tape. So my expectation, if he's the guy in charge, and if there's going to be an authority figure, so far I'm happy with what he's done. I think he's better than Bruce Pritchard and Karen Jarrett. So I think we'd expect him to see him on TV most weeks. There may be weeks where, you know, he doesn't need to be seen, and there's nothing that requires having the authority figure on the show. But I sort of expect we'll see him most weeks. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I think if he's not a member of the creative team, then there's probably no real reason to sign him to a full-time deal. You know, he could, like you said, he can just come in for a week or so, work, you know, six, seven shows, and then that takes care of a month and a half or more of TV time. You know, I mean, it's not like GFW really has to worry about like Ring of Honor trying to sign him, or probably, you know, WWE may do like a Legends deal with him someday, but you know, they're not going to put him in any sort of creative role. So I think they're just trying to feel him out in that aspect, though I wouldn't be too surprised in the future if he does end up doing more with the company. But yeah, he notoriously hates traveling, so I think it probably works out for him that he can just go there once every 6 weeks or 2 months or so. So I think that relationship will continue for a while.
And if you listen to the podcast, he has a hell of a travel story where he got stuck in some traffic jams. I think it was one in Chattanooga, one in Georgia. He had a thunderstorm about 15 miles away from Orlando and was stuck for an hour. So he was joking on the podcast about how he remembers why he stopped traveling.
My second question is in regards to the Global Force Global Championship picture. If either one of you were running Global Force's creative side, would you have gone with Eli Drake as your champion? And if not, who would you have gone with and why?
Andrew, what are your thoughts on that? Would you have gone with Drake or would you have gone with somebody else?
I would not have gone with Drake at this point. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I liked it. I liked it overall, but I would have liked more of a story, more of him having in-ring credibility. Because as we talked, like, he talked last week for 30 seconds, and we were surprised because he went weeks without doing anything on air. He was like, he was a complete afterthought. So I would have liked to have seen some momentum. For me, I would have just gone all in on the LAX story, given it to Low-Key. He's not going to be a long-term champion. He's not going to hold it for 6 months. But if they want to really get something out of LAX, having them have the world title and the tag titles would have made them seem like a bigger threat. But with Homicide missing these tapings, El Patron out of the company, I guess Low-Key now out of the company, I imagine they're probably going to be phasing it down pretty soon, unless they want to keep on changing members for the stable. But yeah, I would have done Low-Key for a month or two.
Yeah, I'm sort of in Andrew's boat too, where I'm, at least in regards to Drake, I'm okay with Eli Drake being champion. I don't know if I would have done it at this point, though. Probably not. I think if it were up to me, people might roll their eyes. I probably would have put it back on Lashley and tried to tell a different story there. They're doing something different with Lashley now in American Top Team, and I think that the title could have been an interesting addition to that storyline, especially as the story being there's one force trying to pull Lashley away from wrestling. Well, if he's the world champion, that's an interesting wrinkle in that type of storyline. So I think if it were me, if I were booking the show, I probably would have put it back on Lashley. I think from a PR standpoint, you can trust him. He's believable, and it can add a little bit to what his storyline is right now, and you could easily transition out of that and go into other things. Now, the caveat to that is if they know that Lashley is going to put his pro wrestling career on hold to go into MMA full time, then I would not have made that move and understand why they didn't hear. And I understand why he put Matt Sydal over last week. If that's what they know, and we don't know if that's what they know, but assuming that he is going to remain a full-time member of the roster in the sense that he's going to be at every television taping and on TV every week, I would have put the title on him. If GFW had some type of information and knowledge that this was going to be Lashley's last set of tapings for a while because he's going to go full-time into MMA, then I would have made a different decision.
I think I can go with that. And my final question, what would you select as your Bound for Glory main event? And why?
That is a tough one.
Yeah.
You know, I guess a lot of it depends on whether or not they keep the title on Eli Drake all the way to Bound for Glory, which I say all the way to Bound for Glory. It's only 2 months away.
Right.
I have to think they're going to. I can't imagine they're going to put the title on Eli Drake this early in his cycle, I guess, as a character to take it off. I think taking it off of him too soon is going to hurt him too much. So I do think they'll keep the title on Eli Drake. And if you build up who he's going to face, I think you could build, I mean, it's not a long time to do it. You know, 2 months isn't a terribly long time, but I think you could build up a story between Eli Drake and Johnny Impact for the title at Bound for Glory. Especially with the way that Johnny Impact was eliminated tonight. Like we were saying earlier, he was eliminated by Eli Drake on the outside. Kind of a cheap elimination. They were making a big deal out of how much EC3 and Impact were finding themselves during the Gauntlet match. So I think they might head in that direction, at least in the short term. But you could do a 4 or 5 week program between Impact and EC3 and let Impact come out on top, give him a win over a top guy in GFW like EC3, and then put him in the title picture against Eli Drake. I think that's where I would go if you told me, okay, you have to keep the title on Eli Drake, who's going to be your main event with him at Bound for Glory? I think it would be Johnny Impact, and you try to make it the crowning moment for him, coming into the company. I'm not always a big fan of them giving the title right to the former WWE mid-card guy, but you know, he's made such a name for himself on the independent scene. I think that they would get themselves a lot of internet goodwill, I guess you could say, by putting the title on him. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, that was my exact guess too. Johnny Impact versus Eli Drake. It's so weird though to think of, because that's their version of WrestleMania, and like you said, that's in October. And,
yeah.
And there is no clear match for what it would be. You know,
it doesn't feel big enough.
Speculated year out. Yeah, no, not yeah, nowhere near enough. And I mean, I'm excited that Eli Drake has the title, but it would be nice if it had happened, say, in February, and he had a 6-month run going. And then Johnny Impact comes in. But, I mean, I think it's pretty wide open, but that would be my guess. And I don't love it either, also because I think Johnny Impact is he's 100 times better. Maybe he's gotten better as a face, but he did great work in Lucha Underground. He was way too corny for me in WWE when he was a baby face. But maybe that also is due to their bad dialogue and whatnot. So maybe he's improved, but I'm not in love with that match, but I don't know what else he would do at this point. Because that's not too far off into the future.
Yeah, I'm sort of, it's not a knock on Eli Drake, because you and I have both talked about how we're fans of Eli Drake and how we think he could be a big part of their future. But right now, I'm not sure there's anything right now that they could do 2 months from now that would feel big enough with him to be a Bound for Glory main event. You know, I can't think of one. I just don't know who you could put there to make it feel main event worthy for your biggest show of the year, because I don't think that Drake's really at that point yet. I think he could get him there, but I don't think he's at that point yet.
Right. No, I completely agree.
I agree with both of you. Oh, and by the way, Andrew, Bound for Glory is on November 5th this year.
Oh,
that's right. It's later. Yeah, I keep thinking October.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, it was. It always used to be in October, didn't it?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I'm not exactly sure why they moved it, but it's moved to November 5th this year.
Okay, so probably about nine episodes left, I guess, so they can try to do something until then.
Yeah, maybe they'll have some type of coordinates. Chaos tournament or something.
Oh, God. Don't give them ideas. Although, I guess they already taped it, so we're good.
Yeah. Well, that's it for me, guys. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, Kylan.
You too. You're welcome, Mike.
All right, that was Kylan from New Jersey. He drops off at 515-605-9345. There's a couple of other people on hold. I forgot to mention this. If you do want to get on the air, I see you sitting there on hold, but you got to hit the number 1 if you want to get on the air. That's going to let us know that you do want to get on the air. So there's a few people that are on hold right now. If you're just listening in, that's fine. If you do want to get on the air, though, you got to hit the number 1. That's going to alert us that you want to get on the air. We're going to take another quick break, though. We'll be back in just a minute. When we do, we'll either go to some more calls, or Andrew and I will begin running down the other parts of the show that we haven't talked about yet. And then also in a little bit, our 3 things. This week, the 3 pushes that GFW should not have given up on so soon. Of course, it's going to be mostly TNA stuff, because GFW hasn't been around all that long, but I'm trying to avoid using the TNA name now that it's gone. So 3 pushes they shouldn't have given up on so soon. That'll be in our 3 things later on in the show. Up next, we'll start to run down the segments we haven't yet talked about. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled, or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page. or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, back here at the PW Torch Livecast. It is Thursday, August 24th. This is the post-Impact edition. Eli Drake is the new Impact World, or excuse me, Global, GFW Global Champion. They've changed names so many times in the last 3 months, I'm getting all confused.
Yeah, I don't think, like, I could have told you for sure that it was just the Global Championship, or I probably would have said Global Federation or something.
Global,
I don't know.
The World Global Championship. The World Global Championship. X Division.
Here we go.
Grand Global World. Let's get to the other parts of the show that we haven't already discussed. We talked about the main event, which was basically the entire second hour. But they aired the new signature again to start the show. I talked about how much I liked that last week where they showed all the different networks around the world. Then they aired a recap of last week's Destination X. This was the only time you saw Desmond Xavier, Sanjay Dutt, or Trevor Lee on this show, was in this recap video, with the exception of, I guess, Trevor Lee was shown on the video package where they highlighted their New York trip. Then they showed clips of backstage. This was interesting. This was the type of backstage segment, Andrew, that I like. They showed this was something that was happening immediately following last week's show. Dan Lambert and American Top Team were coming back through the curtain and ended up getting into a screaming match with Jeff Jarrett. And Dan Lambert was saying that Lashley was there, that Jarrett should be thanking his lucky stars that Lashley was even there. Lashley's trying to pull the two apart. Scott D'Amore was involved. Jarrett yelled back, which I thought was funny, "Are you going to pay him the money that I'm paying him?" Lashley was trying to break up Lambert and Jarrett. James Storm comes into the shot at some point, starts screaming obscenities at American Top Team. And then Lambert told Lashley, "This is on you." And I saw that video ended. But this is the type of backstage stuff that I'm a fan of. Something's happening backstage. We got a camera there. We're going to show it to you. Everybody knew that the camera was there. But there's this commotion happening. We caught it. Here's what happened. I thought that this was interesting. I mean, it didn't really add a whole lot to the story. It was just a bunch of arguing going on backstage. But it enhanced the angle at the end of the show last week. And to me, made some sense. You got a big commotion going on backstage. They caught it on tape. They aired it.
Yeah, I like that it also, you know, whenever a wrestling show ends, you kind of wonder, like, well, what happens? Like, do people still fight backstage? Like, do heels and faces just duke it out whenever they see each other? So I kind of like it that, it, you know, there was still chaos going on after the cameras were off. I thought it went on a little bit too long, though. And whenever I see, you know, like Jarrett and D'Amore show up, I just kind of roll my eyes because it just feels like, I don't know. They got to try to find their way into the show whenever they can. And I've talked about it before. I think Jeff Jarrett appearances should mean something, but they're always so random and they just don't mean anything. I mean, I don't, he's getting himself involved in this feud, but I don't know why, and I don't know what he's going to do. So I liked it, but I just, I did have some nitpicks on it.
The one thing I'll say about Jarrett so far is when we've seen him backstage. And he hasn't come out and cut a promo in the ring that I can recall. If I'm wrong, correct me.
Just the Slammiversary one.
Oh, okay, yeah, exactly. But for the most part, he's been, like with this stuff, he was shown backstage. It went to another video of American Top Team arriving at the building today, and Jarrett went up to welcome them and shake his hand, shake Lambert's hand, but Lambert refused. I mean, American Top Team is being pushed as the heels here. Then they went to a video clip again from earlier today where Jim Cornette was earlier today in air quotes, was shown at ringside holding a talent meeting, talking about the gauntlet match that was going to be happening in the main event. Cornette said that he's heard every excuse in the book and it's not happening in GFW. He said no one would have their, and I thought this was a direct shot at El Patron. No one would have their personal life plastered all over TMZ. And then what I thought was a shot at Booker T. No one would get a paycheck for going on vacation. Lashley said, and the thing that I thought was cool here, Cornette looked around and said that Lashley wasn't there. He was late, so he's going to be finding him. And then Cornette talked about his mystery entrant, which we had already complained about. But I thought this was well produced. It was everybody knew the camera was there. It was a talent meeting at ringside. They recorded it. I thought Cornette's, so far anyway, I'm okay with the way Jim Cornette is being presented as the babyface authority figure. I would rather you just abandon authority figures altogether, but if you're going to do one, I think this is a fresh approach. It's not, you know, the heel trying to run and rule over all the wrestlers. You got a guy here that's trying to be fair. I liked how he said Lashley wasn't there, so he was going to fine him. Overall, and it's been not even 2 weeks yet, you know, because he came in the middle of the show last week, but I like the presentation of Jim Cornette so far.
Yeah, I do too. I'm still not high on him coming in at all in this capacity, but I think they are using him in a good way. And like you said, it's refreshing. Evil authority figures is just one of the most tired things in all of wrestling. So I do like that approach that they're taking to it. He feels a lot more realistic than Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon over on SmackDown. He's kind of getting out of the way in that aspect, even though he's all over the show. I do have a complaint with this segment, though. Impact, Global Force, they're doing this thing now where they play this super dramatic music during their segments. And it's just,
I've noticed that
way
too.
Way too over the top. Yeah, it's like a gunfight in a movie. I thought during this point, and I don't know if maybe it's just my TV. I don't have a great surround system or anything, but there were times during that and during the segments where all the different wrestlers were talking to the camera about why they would win, I couldn't hear what they were saying at points. It seemed like they just had the audio mixed up too loud. That's like a easy post-production effort, but unless that's just my TV, but yeah, it was a little too overdone for my taste.
I didn't notice that audio so much here. When they were following guys around backstage and they were sort of cutting these small 30-second promos on why they were going to win the title, I did notice it there. There were some guys where I had a real hard time understanding what they were saying and hearing it. It was almost like it was mic'd a little off. After that video, they went to the opening match. It was the only other match in the show other than the main event. OVE beat the Heat Seekers in 3 minutes. We never got names on the Heat Seekers, but OVE, their second match in as many weeks, get their second win in as many weeks after debuting. They beat the Heat Seekers in 3 minutes. I thought this was a much better match than their debut. I thought it was booked better. They were more dominant in this match. I think they barely sold at all, other than maybe one move in the corner. This felt like what their debut should have been, in my opinion. They're seemed to have them on the fast track of getting to LAX and challenging for the tag titles. If you do that, that's fine. I thought the amount of selling they did last week against basically a jobber tag team just didn't fit. It looked weird. You know, they didn't seem like a big deal. They didn't seem like they were dangerous. I felt like they came across like a much more dangerous team after this win this week. What were your impressions of this match for OVE, especially comparing it to what they did with them last week?
I thought it was about the same. I still thought it was a bit clunky. And I still thought they actually sold a little bit too much for their opponents. I think the thing with them right now is that we need to hear from them, because Ohio versus everything. That's one of the goofiest names there is. What does that mean?
No clue.
They also, you know, yeah, when they showed up in their vignettes, they were wearing, I don't know, kind of like Wyatt family creepy masks. And
I thought they were going to be heels.
What's behind that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they came across very heelish. So I want to know who they are. You know, give them the mic for a minute, or just go backstage and let them talk, or just run more vignettes on who they are and what they're about. The way they're presented is just very against what they showed us a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, I get why they are being positioned as babyfaces if they want them to challenge LAX. Like, it makes sense, but it doesn't seem to fit with the vignettes, because they really came. Yeah. I agree with you. They came across heelish in the vignettes. I thought they were a heel tag team. It almost looked like they were kind of in the same mold as Decay, now they've come in, there's something completely different than what those vignettes were, and they're baby faces. I mean, they're starting a chant for themselves at one point tonight, so they're clearly baby faces. But other than that presentation, which I definitely think they need to work on, I thought they at least did a better job in how the match was booked. Last week, I mean, they wrestled a job tag team last week, and it was like it was almost a 50-50 match. So, like, if OVE, if OVE is going to win but wrestles a 50-50 match with this team that we've never heard of, why are they going to challenge for the tag titles? You know what I mean? No sense at all.
Yeah, I'm not, like, giving up on them by any means either. I just think their debut matches haven't been so hot, but they're badly needed. I mean, they need a lot more tag teams in the company at this point, and they probably, I don't know, maybe they just didn't realize they were too heavy on the heel side, so they just switched them face and hoped that nobody would notice. But I was actually more interested in those vignettes than what we have right now. So hopefully they come up with some sort of character development to, you know, I guess let us know just who they are.
After that, Jim Cornette was on the phone in his office. He was telling someone on the phone that he was going to fine Bobby Lashley $5,000 for being late. Small little thing, but I like those types of things being included. Eli Drake walked into the office with Chris Adonis. Drake said that he may have offended Cornette last week, and he apologized. Drake said that he didn't mean when he said he was number one that he wanted to be number one in the gauntlet. He said that he was saying that he's just really good. And Cornette asked Drake if he would leave him alone if he gave him a different number. And Cornette said that instead of being number one, Eli Drake could be number two. And of course, Drake was not amused by this because number two was essentially the same as number one. There was a lot of yelling. They went to a break. Then they came back and Taryn Terrell cut a promo. Well, she was actually interviewed by Jeremy Borash in the ring. I think it was only one question that Borash got off, and then Terrell sort of cut a promo after that. But Taryn Terrell returned. Last week, she cost Gail Kim the women's title against Sienna. She came on here and cut a promo talking about how her and Gail used to be friends, and now they're not, and Gail doesn't follow her on Twitter, and et cetera, et cetera. I wasn't a big fan of this segment. I like Taryn Terrell. I thought what they did with the dollhouse was really good stuff, but I wasn't a fan of this. I don't really know what this was. I mean, I'm glad they gave her the opportunity to speak after her return last week, but I just didn't think the content here was very good.
No, and they're doing the exact same thing like Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, where like Davey Richards had this complaint that Eddie Edwards never came to visit him in the hospital.
Yeah,
and
checked
up on him. Yeah, so they're making it seem like Gail Kim is the bad person here. Maybe she'll come and fire back, but I don't think Eddie ever did.
That's what she said. So Taryn Terrell said that she came up for the Hall of Fame, and then Gail never thanked her for being there when Gail went into the Hall of Fame. That's what it was. I missed that. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So my other note here is it's just like a takeover. Asuka and Ember Moon put on just this fantastic match, and they both look like athletes, and they're wearing ring gear that make them look cool. And like Taryn looked like she was basically just wearing lingerie. It felt like it was from a different era. I don't know. Like, you know, one company is treating women as super serious athletes, and Taryn just coming out like dressed like that. It just struck me as like a Russo era type act.
When Gail Kim came out at the end and chased Taryn out of the ring, I noted in my report on PWTorch.com that Taryn literally had to hold her top up to avoid a wardrobe malfunction. And you're right. Yeah. And the thing that's weird about it too, I remember reading stories back around 2014 or 2015. I can't recall when it was that she left, but the thing that struck me, and I remember reading about this, it just doesn't make any sense, especially with what was happening tonight. She talked about the reason why she got out of wrestling was she got married, she'd become a mom, but she had also become a born-again Christian, and she didn't really feel like what she was doing in wrestling was conducive to what she wanted her lifestyle to be. Apparently that has changed because, like you said, she was on TV tonight in lingerie. So if that's the stuff that she was talking about, then it just seemed a little weird to me. You know, she seemed like she wanted to get out of wrestling because she wanted to be live a better life, get away from some of the salacious stuff that wrestling was making her do. And now she's back, and 1 week later, she's on TV in lingerie.
Wasn't her last run, didn't she have a feud with Gail Kim where she was trying to seduce her husband?
That's right.
And like, I remember she like,
yeah, that's right,
disrobed, and she was in lingerie then. And it was like, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. It's just kind of weird and goofy, and it just doesn't seem quite right.
That pretty much wraps it up. All right, let's move on. So Josh Matthews then threw to Jeremy Borash threw to a video of GFW's tour of the Northeast. They had some behind the scenes stuff. One funny note from here, I thought was kind of funny. They aired this video about their tour of the two New York shows that they did, and they've got little clips of fans talking about it. And there's one kid who goes, "All the matches were 4 stars," and I thought to myself, really? You're on a promo video. You couldn't give the company you're doing a quick interview for, you couldn't say 5 stars. You had to give him 4 stars.
Oh, that kid. Retake.
Yeah. That's one of those things, though, too. It's like somebody probably should have said something to him, like, hey, can we shoot that again? And can you just say 5 stars? Just because it's part of the vocabulary of wrestling fans. You know, everything's out of 5 stars. But I just thought it was kind of funny that, you know, they're airing this thing where they're trying to promo their live events and get people excited about live events, and they've got someone going, all the matches were 4 stars, which isn't a bad thing, but, you know, maybe you should have said that they were 5 stars.
I wish he would have said, like, every match was between 3.5 stars and 4.25. Just an 8-year-old saying that.
That would have been great. And not to mention, the kid was like 12 years old. I think he thought he was doing something good. And he was. I mean, if you have a card full of actual 4-star matches, it's a pretty damn good house show. But I just thought it was funny. I just thought it was funny. It's like, come on, say 5. Then they aired a video with the video we were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, where everybody said why they were going to win the title. I was, other than the mic being a little weird, I was okay with this. I thought this was stuff that they should be doing. I mean, we've talked about it with the Super X Cup and other things. Like, tell me why the title is important to you. Some of the stuff was a little silly. I mean, Chris Adonis said that he was going to win because he had the best specimen. And I think Braxton Sutter just said that he wanted to win the world title. It's like, well, thanks, yeah. Eli Drake said he was going to win because he had a silver tongue and a golden voice, which, again, like, all right, yeah, well, he's the heel at least. But there were some good things here too. I like that Lashley said that him winning the title was inevitable. You know, he has a lot of confidence in himself as a character. We've seen that. The thing that I found the funniest, though, is Moose said that he was going to win the title because that's what the people want. Well, sorry, Moose.
Guess not. They didn't want it bad enough.
Yeah, they didn't want it enough.
I really liked those segments. I think that was a really good idea. It reminded me of old Royal Rumbles, like 1990.
Oh, yeah.
When they would have each of the competitors. Yeah, like, I wish WWE still did that for every Royal Rumble. Let every person talk and let us know why they think they're going to win. So, yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit, actually, minus the sound issues.
And then the real main event, everybody thought it was the world title gauntlet match, but the real main event was Grado, who came to the ring to say goodbye. He's being deported. It was nice knowing us all, as he was saying. And they went through this whole thing. Joseph Park was there. At one point, Joseph Park stopped and said that he loved Grado. And for a brief second, I thought to myself, ooh. Oh, no. Oh, no. They're not going to have Joseph Park is not going to propose to Grado. Please tell me they're not going there. And they didn't, thankfully, because that I don't even want to get started. So Park said that his uncle Leo always told him that as long as he's there, there you go. Grado was very confused by that. Grado said that he was going to miss a lot of things about the U.S. He was going to miss macaroni and cheese, hot dogs, boneless wings, the wings with the bones, the cheese fries, the chili cheese fries, the chili cheese fries with sour cream, and the chili cheese fries with sour cream and extra cheese. Then finally, after this whole big long goodbye, Laurel Van Ness comes out. But she's not crazy anymore. She doesn't have makeup all over her face. She's not wearing a wedding dress that she's been wearing since March. She's just back to normal. And Laurel Van Ness ends up proposing to Grado. She said that Grado was the peanut butter to her jelly, the whipped cream to her Twinkie, and the barbecue sauce to her ribs. So there we go. Grado is engaged. He's getting married to Laurel Van Ness. He's going to get to stay in America, and we're all happy. Aren't we? are we? I think we're supposed to be.
Am I a horrible person if I actually kind of like this segment?
I'm sad. I liked crazy Laurel Van Ness, and she's not crazy anymore.
I am too. I wish there would have been an explanation. Okay, yeah, there's some definite plot holes here. Like, I went on a date like a month ago, and they made it seem like they've been dating for weeks.
Laurel Van Ness said that these were the best few weeks of her life, and I said, I thought the same thing. I said, didn't they just go on one date, or am I missing something?
Yeah. Because both of us have admitted that's a guilty pleasure, that gimmick. So I don't know if this is going to be a swerve and she'll turn back to it, which I think I'd have no problem with, because I think Laurel Van Ness and Grado does not have staying power. See Ally and Braxton Sutter for that. Right now, Joseph Park, his facial expressions are just one of my guilty pleasures in wrestling. Like, I'm like not even watching Grado and Laurel Van Ness. I'm just watching this ridiculous TGIF overacting of Joseph Park, and for some reason it cracks me up, and I think I would give the segment a mild hit, even though it was completely stupid in every single way.
When Laurel got down on one knee, Joseph Park started jumping up and down and screaming at I'm not even sure I could get my voice this high, with the highest pitch voice possible. Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! And I lost it. I stopped paying attention at that point because I was laughing. You're right. I didn't think that a lot of his stuff. I thought his stuff was really cheesy and stuff when they were doing all the segments with Jeremy Borash. But the last couple of weeks with Grado, he's found a sweet spot when it comes to comedy. And you're right. His facial expressions are top notch right now.
And just like hit that line that when you're there, you're there. Like, I don't know why he's knocking it out of the park right now.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that'll last, but he's been one of the silent MVPs of Impact lately.
Congo,
for guilty comedy.
I was gonna say Congo Khan comes out here at the end, and he looked like he was gonna come down and interrupt the proposal, the magic moment between Laurel Van Ness and Grado. And then Mahabali Sharer is back from India. He's returned. They didn't forget him there. He stood in the aisle. And for some reason, Congo Kong, who has not been scared of anyone, Congo Kong backed up and went backstage when he saw Mahabali Sharer standing in the aisle. Because Mahabali Sharer has been treated like an unstoppable monster on Impact. Not a guy that gets beaten in 6 minutes usually. So yeah, Congo Kong retreated backstage as soon as Mahabali Sharer was in the aisle. And then Laurel Van Ness and Grado were left to live happily ever after, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never ever understand the push of Mahabali Sharer unless he is doing great business in India for them or helping with those relationships, because he's still the greenest person on the roster, and I don't know how he ties into all this. I don't know why he's the defender of love, but I don't know what to say about him there. I guess that you just got to accept it, that he's going to be there and doing something.
That would be a great new gimmick. Mahabali Sharer, defender of love.
it's better than just showing up once a month and doing the Sharer shuffle for a bit.
Yeah, I still don't know what that is. Why is he dancing? No one has ever explained to me why he's dancing.
No, I don't think it'll ever make sense.
Then backstage, another good backstage segment after this with Jim Cornette. Eddie Edwards was in his office, and Cornette said that the numbers were drawn at random, and he knows that Edwards has a crummy entrance number, but Cornette said that Anthem would be proud, and he would be proud if Eddie Edwards was the global champion. And then he actually, I thought, told a pretty cool story here, where when he first got to Ring of Honor, Eddie Edwards was backstage. He shows up one night, and he's got a cast on, and I think he said his arm had been broken the night before at a show in Boston, and Cornette said to somebody that he was there with, "Oh, so who's replacing Eddie Edwards tonight?" And they said, "Oh, no, he's going to wrestle." And Cornette talked about how blown away he was that this guy who broke his arm the night before, was going to wrestle for the World Tag Team titles on the show the very next night. He had this giant cast on his arm, and he told Eddie Edwards he's been around wrestling a long time, and that was one of the gutsiest things he's ever seen. And that's when he said Anthem will be proud, and he would be proud if Edwards was global champion. So my takeaway from this, especially with Edwards and Drake being the last two guys in the ring, my sense is that Eli Drake and Eddie Edwards isn't done. That Eddie Edwards is going to probably have a feud here with Eli Drake over the world title, at least in the immediate aftermath of this match. I think you could, maybe you'll see Johnny Impact and Eli Drake come together closer to Bound for Glory, but my sense is that they are probably, from what we saw tonight, going to go with Johnny Impact in EC3 and then probably Eddie Edwards and Eli Drake for now. I don't think that both of those are going to go 2.5 months to Bound for Glory, but I think that they're going to go in that direction now. What's sort of your read on where they might go with both of those coming out of a segment like this, and just what else we've seen on the show?
Yeah, I think that's a really good program, actually, to run just for a few weeks. Edwards has some credibility in GFW, you know, so if Eli Drake beats him and beats him, you know, especially if he beats him clean, that will boost him up a bit, you know, to take on Johnny Impact. During that, I did like that Cornette segment as well. It gave like some human emotion and just felt kind of, you know, real. What I was wondering though, you know, last week Cornette didn't know who LAX was. So I was almost like, I wonder if Cornette knows that Eddie was champ once. Because just that speech he gave made it seem like this is your big night, kid. You know, your first big dance. But overall, I did like it, though. That did pop into my mind.
Then after that, everything else we've talked about. We talked about the LAX thing backstage where Diamante is apparently a pimp. She's channeling the Godfather now, I guess, along with the rest of LAX. And then they went to the Gauntlet Battle Royal, and we talked a lot about that. Any surprises, though? I mean, we talked about the guys that they didn't use that maybe they should have used. Some surprise inclusions there, although their roster is fairly thin. Any other surprises or takeaways in terms of guys that maybe were eliminated early or guys? Do you think there's something to read into some of the people that were eliminated by other people, such as, I'm trying to see here, such as, you know, Congo Kong, obviously, being eliminated by Mahabali Sher when he pulled the top rope down. They've teased a feud between those two as well. Do you think that any of the eliminations lead to anything or play into anything, or is this just one of those things where they were trying to get to the final two and maybe who necessarily eliminated who doesn't matter much or will play into future storyline?
I think there was a couple minor things there, like Sher and Congo Kong. What was kind of telling to me was like just low-key being dumped unceremoniously from the match. I think that was pretty telling for what they thought of him, and that's probably why he you know, decided to leave the company. My other big takeaway, I guess, or one of them, was I thought they were going to – I can't even remember the guy's name. He's never wrestled before, and he showed up, you know, for 30 seconds. I thought they were
Richard
actually
going to
do something with him.
Standby wrestler, that I think they call him. That's very weird.
Yeah, that was really random. So I figured if they were going to put him in the match, he'd at least do something noteworthy. Otherwise, that, you know, because like Eli Drake just made fun of him. I'm sorry. I'm blanking on his name. Carter. Yeah, he made fun of him. He showed up. He got tossed out. So it was just nothing. I imagine he'll probably show up a few more times. But just a lot of randomness there.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of funny here? I'm going through other guys on the roster who were not involved in this match, but guys like Richard Justice were and Suicide were.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Sanjay Dutt, both of the Veterans of War guys. If they're going to use tag teams, they used Garza Jr. Marche Rocket, we haven't seen in a while. Let's see, Laredo Kid. Again, they used Garza Jr. Kingston was in the match. He re-debuted. The big one that I think really sticks out is James Storm. And we know James Storm was there because they showed him on TV in the opening video. They showed him getting involved with American Top Team. So that's the one that really sticks out to me because we knew he was there. They showed him on TV. and he wasn't in the match. And I know he's been out with a storyline. I think it's a storyline concussion. I don't think it's a legit. Was a legit one, but he had been out with a concussion since Slammiversary, and that's why he missed the last set of tapings. But weird to me that he wasn't included when he was backstage, and it was very apparent that he was in the building.
Yeah, it's also weird that they never bothered to follow up on that storyline. That was like 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's why I kind of remember. I don't even remember if it's a storyline or not. I believe it was. I don't think he suffered a legitimate concussion, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, and also Drago was not in there, or Drago.
Nope, he wasn't.
Yeah, just Jim Cornette did not make good choices on that one. He's got some explaining to do next week.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, that's pretty much everything else that we haven't already gotten to. So let's go to a quick break. We come back, we'll do our three things, then we'll throw to some VIP plugs, and we'll get to our VIP after show for VIP members at pwtorch.com. So one more quick break. When we come back, our top three GFW pushes that ended too soon. They gave up on too soon, right here on the PW Torch livecast.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
All right, it's time for our top three, this week's top three, the top three pushes that GFW gave up on too soon. Let's get right to it. Andrew, who'd you have as your number three?
Just going off of mine, I'm going with people that never had a huge push. So I'm not, define it however you want. People that gave up too soon, I'm not going with people that ever had a big push.
I did the same thing.
Oh, okay, cool.
Guys that look, I sort of went with guys that looked like they were going to go with and then never did, but maybe should have.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good. My number three, I think I talked about him a few months ago on a list, but I'm going to go Amazing Red. He had a few semi-big pushes in the early days of TNA, and then he got hurt. I think he retired. He came back, and he was paired with Don West for a couple months, maybe not even that long. A very, very strange pairing. I thought he was getting over a bit. I thought the crowd was into it, and then they just dropped it, and he never recovered. He, I think, played like Sangriento for a bit and never got a decent sized push again, but I thought it was working. And I thought he could have been the face or one of the top faces of the X division during that time period.
Yeah, me too. It's hard for people that are maybe younger. Like if you're a teenager right now, or even in your early 20s and you weren't following wrestling closely in 2002, 2003, all the way to like the mid 2000s, Amazing Red was a big deal. And I remember when he was lighting the indie scene on fire, and he had so much momentum when he joined TNA. And yeah, I agree. It seemed like they had a star there in the X division, and they never were able to use him the right way.
Yeah, some knee injuries as well. I mean,
yeah, that too.
Era.
That too. Yeah.
If he came around now, he would be killing it on NXT or 205 Live. I think he'd be a much bigger star today if he was injury free and showed up a little later.
I went with Jay Lethal as my number three, and obviously we've seen what Jay Lethal has done as a member of Ring of Honor, former Ring of Honor World Champion. They treated him as a serious athlete, but with TNA. They did the machismo gimmick, and it was because he was really good at impersonating Macho Man, which was funny, but I think they sort of typecast him as just a comedy character, and clearly he was much, much more than that. And there were times, though, where it seemed like they were going to try to break him free of that and push him as a serious wrestler. I want to say, and I could be mistaken, but I want to say that he main evented an episode of Impact against Kurt Angle one night. I could be wrong. I have that in my mind that he...
They had a big pay-per-view match once.
Maybe that's what it was.
But he beat him at a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it just seemed like they were never able to really pull the trigger on taking him seriously, and that no matter what he did, they were going to have him typecast as a comedy guy because he was good at impersonating Macho Man and had an incredible woo-off with Ric Flair one night. It seems like that's all they thought he could do, and they never really went further with him. Clearly, we've seen that he was capable of going much further than what he was pushed. Andrew, you there? Well, not sure what happened here. I think we lost Andrew. Yeah, we've lost Andrew for some reason. I'm not sure exactly what happened there. So if we'll see if we can get him
60
back. If we can't get him back, I'll run through the rest of my list here, and then we'll wrap up the show. And Andrew and I will talk again in a couple of minutes on the PW Torch VIP after show. So I had Jay Lethal as my number three. I had Gunner as my number two. Gunner was a guy that looked like they were going to push for a while as being near the top. You know, he had gotten a win over James Storm on pay-per-view in an I Quit match. I think he had also had a steel cage match win over James Storm on pay-per-view as part of that feud. So it had looked like that they were going to go with Gunner for a while. And again, like, it was one of those situations where they sort of just dipped their toe in the water and never went all the way with it for whatever reason. So that to me was a little strange. You know, I always felt that he could do more. And they're also, of course, they're also in a position now where Gunner is with NXT, and who knows what he's going to do. He could be onto some bigger things. So we'll see. You know, you'll see what the future is with him. So I had Gunner as my number two, and then I had, I had Gunner as my number two, and I had Wes Briscoe as my number three. Excuse me, as my number one. So I had Jay Lethal number three, Gunner number two, Wes Briscoe number one. And Wes Briscoe, another guy that had some big wins on pay-per-view. He beat Kurt Angle in a cage on pay-per-view back around 2014, maybe. He had some big wins, some big moments. And it looked like he had the look, he had the pedigree. It looked like he was a guy that they were going to be able to do something with long-term and build something around long-term. And he had like these mini pushes. It sort of felt like with Wes a lot, it felt like it was a lot of start and stop with him, that they would start something, they'd pull back, they'd start something, they'd pull back, but they would never really go all in. And I always felt that, you know what, they probably should have gone all in. He hasn't hooked on with NXT yet or anything like that. It's not like he's gone and become a world champion elsewhere like Jay Lethal has, but he was a guy that I think a lot of people had high hopes for and seemed like he had a bigger future than what he was presented with in TNA. And to be quite honest with you, I think him being saddled with Aces and Eights when he first came into the company, I think hurt him a little bit because it got him lost in the shuffle. You know, if he was on his own and debuted on his own, I think it would have helped him in the long run to stand apart. You know, when you get involved in a group like that, fresh into the company, I think it can make it hard for people to view you as a singles guy outside of the group. They just associate you so much with the group because that's all they've ever seen you is with the group. So I think it could become hard for people to associate that act with somebody, with a singles guy, after he's been associated with a group for so long. They just identify that person with the group and that's it. So I think that's where Gunner was a little hurt from a TNA perspective, but he's a guy that, Wes Briscoe from a TNA perspective, but I think he's a guy that they should they could look at Wes Briscoe now, and I think he'd be a valuable commodity for them even right now, come in completely fresh. Because he's a new guy from what he was when he left. I think they could bring him in now and do something with him still, because he's still on the younger side, I believe. Let me Google Wes Briscoe. Yeah, he's 34 years old, which from wrestling standards is pretty young. And I know he's still working very regularly. He was on a panel at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, the Dan Gable Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame out in Iowa, where Wade Keller and Bruce Mitchell visited earlier in the summer. And you can listen to the panel if you're a VIP member. You have access to it. You could listen to it as, I think it was an episode of the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, where Wes talked about with, I think Bruce was on the panel as well, and talked about independent wrestling today and what his schedule is like and what he does. And, you know, he's a guy that I think could still be helpful to them, to TNA or GFW today. So that will that'll pretty much do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Andrew and I are having trouble connecting here. So we'll connect together, though, on the VIP after show coming up in just a couple of minutes. If you're listening to this on the RSS feed and not live, you'll be able to click right over to the VIP after show as soon as you finish up with this episode of the PW Torch Livecast. But before we do get out of here, I want to tell you a little more about PW Torch VIP. Of course, if you are a VIP member, you will get our VIP after show. You'll also get to hear The Fix with Todd Martin, which posted yesterday. You'll get the daily Wade Keller hotline. You'll get the Bruce Mitchell audio show, which will drop on Sunday, and a whole lot more. Sean Radican does a great job covering the indie scene and Ring of Honor. There's New Japan as well. So a whole bunch of stuff you get if you're VIP. I believe I read or heard from Wade that last month we had 110 VIP exclusive podcasts that dropped in the month of July. So if you enjoy things like the PW Torch Livecast, you're going to love PW Torch VIP. You'll hear a little bit more about VIP in 1 second. But before I get out of here, you can follow Andrew Socek on Twitter at Andrew Socek. Socek is S-O-U-C-E-K. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. And I know Andrew always likes to tell you to check out PW Podcast, where you can check out recaps, written recaps of all your favorite pro wrestling podcasts if you don't get a chance to listen to them live. Or listen to them at all. That's okay. Go to pwpodcast.com. You get full recaps of all the stuff you missed, including quick rundowns with the biggest quotes, the biggest stories coming out of all the podcasts around pro wrestling. Again, that's pwpodcast.com. Thank you for listening to this week's PW Torch Livecast. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Andrew and I will talk to VIP members on the other side on the VIP after show. If you're not a VIP member, what are you waiting for? And if you're not, well, we will talk to you next week at 10 p.m. as soon as Impact goes off the air. But again, for VIP members, Andrew and I will catch you on the VIP after show right after this. Thanks again for listening to this week's PW Torch Livecast post-Impact with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. We'll talk to you again next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch Livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch Livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. you can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.